the technician was like, I can't even continue with this. I'm so scared. I can't continue with this. She goes, you need to go do another ultrasound. So we went back and did another ultrasound. And that's when they said, you are leaking amniotic fluid. You have a ruptured membrane. This pregnancy could possibly kill you.
Our TFMR stories, pregnancy loss support in the heartbreak of terminating a wanted pregnancy.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Our TFMR Stories. Today we have a guest expert with us. Her name is Jen Hepton, and she is a parenting coach, founder of Motherhood Redefined and Loss in Transition, formerly known as Conscious Motherhood. That's how I found her. And after 2 years of trying, Jen got pregnant with twins and tragically lost them to TFMR, and also went on to have more fertility losses, reoccurring miscarriages, and even a 39-week and 5-day stillbirth with her baby, Loey. We've been through so much, Jen. Jen now helps women redefine motherhood on their own terms and navigate life after loss. In this interview, we'll focus on the tools that she uses of EFT, the time technique, and hypno breathwork. So thank you so much for coming on to share your story, to share these tools with us. We need all the healing tools that we can get in this journey through grief. So thank you so much.
Thank you for being here. It's such an honor. And it's so amazing to be like virtually in this space with you, because we've been like, we've known each other for so long in the Instagram world, and I shared your beautiful story. And now it's nice just to have this conversation and be able to share this space together with you and your community.
For sure. Yeah. Thank goodness for the internet and all these connections.
Yeah. Right. Yeah,
oh, I would have been lost. I would have been lost without them. Because, oh, you know, in your day-to-day life, or at least my day-to-day life, you know, people don't talk about any type of pregnancy loss, especially not TFMR.
Especially
so thank you so much for being one of the voices. Yeah. That shares about all these different kinds of losses and how they all overlap and cause compounded grief, you know, like grief on grief on grief. And these tools that you found that have helped you. So if you want to share a little bit more about the story that I introduced there in the introduction, I'd love to hear, you know, about your babies, about what you've been through.
Thank you. Well, thank you for creating this supportive platform that we can normalize the language and the emotions and the stories. That's where the healing really starts, with shared stories. I always start my kind of journey into this world of motherhood or fertility by this like doctor visit. 35 years old, doctor says to me, so have you, and it was like an annual checkup to get your birth control pills as you do. And the doctor, all of a sudden out of the blue, is like, she's like, have you ever thought about having children? And I'm like, oh yeah. Do I need to think about this right now? And she's like, you are 35. You know, you're considered old. And I was like, oh man. And the pressure starts, right? And then of course you start to just, everyone starts getting pregnant around you, and you start to wonder, okay, why am I not getting pregnant 2 years in, seeing doctors, doing everything you possibly can, taking pills, taking herbal supplements, trying to do it naturally. And then finally, we got pregnant after 2 years of trying. And it was, and your community will know this, it was like that moment before all the tragedy, all the trauma, when you see that positive pregnancy test, it was surreal, magical.
And yeah, sometimes, like, am I seeing this? Is this
right?
For real?
Do I need to test again? Do I have enough pee to do this again? Like, do I need to pee again and again and again? Is this real? Yeah. Is this real? And then it is, and then it's not, right? And it's like that. I always try to hold on to that, those precious weeks where I was just elated and just like, we're pregnant. Oh my gosh, we did it. We're going to be parents, all this work. And, you know, telling my own parents and just kind of celebrating it early. And but society tells you don't tell anybody until the second trimester. So you're kind of like trying to navigate all that. And no one, you know, talks about miscarriages or talks about terminating for medical reasons. And then,
yeah, and definitely not fertility challenges either. You're just supposed to be able to do that.
Yes. 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 Yes.
So you've already been through it, you know, up to this point, you know, 2 years mm-hmm. is a really long time.
It's a long time. Yeah. And we were at a point where we thought if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. But when you're in it, trying to get pregnant is like the ultimate goal. Like, you know, we like basal testing, temperature, like, I mean, everything you can think of, I was doing it. And a lot of the emotional and mental load fell on me. And I was in that cycle of just getting it done and doing it and doing it and doing it. And then so when it happens, you're just like, oh, we're done, right? This is it. This is it. And then I think we were 8 weeks pregnant. And it's interesting, when you have infertility trauma, you can tell your story, but some parts of your story gets a bit blurred because of the trauma. So I think it was about 8 or 10 weeks, I started to bleed. And I was like, oh, okay, I heard people bleeding, but I think this is a little bit too late. Called my mom, the only person I knew who I could talk to. Oh, I bled with you. It's fine. Don't worry about it. I'm like, oh, okay, I won't worry about it. But it just continued to happen. And then I was like, I need to make an appointment with the doctor. And so made an appointment with the doctor. And she's like, well, we're not sure what it is. You'll have to go get an ultrasound. And then, of course, wait a couple of days, still bleeding, waiting for the ultrasound appointment, go to the ultrasound appointment. And there she's like, I can't tell you too much of what's happening because you have to meet with your doctor. So this is like a continuous cycle of women just waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. And I talk about that in my book too, just that the unconscious trauma that happens, like you're bleeding, you're trying to go to work, you're trying to keep mm-hmm. this baby alive. And then mm-hmm. in the meantime, and so finally we get, so I talked to the ultrasound and technician said, I think there's 2 heartbeats, but I'm not sure. I'm like, okay, you're not sure. And why are you telling me this? Like, I'm just like, I came here to know why I was bleeding, but now you're telling me how there might be 2 heartbeats.
Wow.
Just a frenzy, right? Just like, I don't know what's going on. So I tell my husband who's in the waiting room and he's like, what? Do you know why you're bleeding? Or is it because of the twins or like what? And I'm just like, when you look back at it, you're like, that was too much to handle. That was way too much to handle. So we go to see our doctor and she's like, you definitely are carrying twins, identical twins, sharing the same placenta. This is a very high risk pregnancy because you are 37 years old, you know, geriatric pregnancy, and they're sharing the same placenta.
Can I say I hate that term? Can I just say
it's awful.
37. You're 37.
I know. And just to say it in front of a woman, it was just too much. So on top of like all this, now you're telling me I'm like, I'm old and I shouldn't be pregnant. But anyways, I think all the language around pregnancy loss needs to change, but
that may be
another podcast.
All of it
needs to change. And she's like, so this is a high risk pregnancy. And we're like, okay. And she also said, and the reason that you're bleeding is because you have a large subchronic hemorrhage. I was like, okay. And she goes, it may be that this is not a viable pregnancy. It may be that one twin will survive and maybe not the other. And I'm like, okay, what do I do now? She's like, well, I think you should be on bed rest and we'll take it week by week. And I'll have to send you to a high risk doctor. And I was like, the only thing I heard in that was take it week by week. Take it week by week. Wow.
Oh yeah. That sounds really scary. Did you feel scared?
I felt so scared. I felt so alone, so scared. And I thought, take it week by week. Like, so I just check in with myself every day or every week to see these two babies are growing or dying. Like it was way too much. So I went on bed rest and was terrified to do anything, terrified to go out, terrified to do anything. Cause I was like, oh my God, all this responsibility on me to make sure these babies are okay. And then we ended up, so continued to bleed every day more blood, more blood, more blood. And then we needed to see, we needed to get an ultrasound every week after week 11 or week 12. So we had to go to a fertility clinic for our ultrasound.
Oh no, you're back in the seat of the pain.
Yeah. And I was like, is there a way that I could go, you know, a separate door? Like, why do I have to be in the waiting room with all these women who are in anticipation of getting pregnant? I'm already pregnant. Like, it's, you can see that, but, you know, not knowing the whole story of what I'm going through, but then I knowing my own story and then, you know, watching everybody with their stuff. It's just like way too much. And anyways, going, I can just remember going down this corridor to get to do my ultrasounds every week in the morning and blood tests and everything. And it was just like, wow. I couldn't do much, to be honest. I'm glad I was bed rest because I couldn't, I was so in my trauma at that point because I couldn't carry conversations. I couldn't see any people. I was feeling socially anxious. Mm. My body was just really in that trauma with me not knowing, right?
Could I ask you about that?
Yeah.
You're able to label that now, but I'm wondering, were you even able to even validate yourself that it was trauma at that time? It's like when we're in it, it's just all consuming and
all consuming.
We don't even know what to think.
Right? Because you're just like, you're on survival mode. You're pure survival mode. And so the cognitive ability to think of anything else is you just can't do it because you have to survive, right? So you're emotionally high, your nervous system's hypervigilant, but you don't realize that you are in trauma. You are in this chronic trauma state.
And unfortunately, I imagine your clinic was not really orienting you in which they should, because all fertility work is trauma.
Oh my God, Sabrina. All of it.
All of it.
All of it.
And why they're not more trauma informed, I do not know.
Oh,
that is the great question of
our times.
Why are not more people trauma informed? But little by little, we're working on it. And at least you are now.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Especially medical professionals. Like there was no invitation to therapy. There was no invitation to check in with my mental health. And I was so scared to tell friends and family that a lot of people didn't even know I was pregnant. Because I was so very scared to share the news. Because I was like, how about if I say one day I'm pregnant and the next day I'm not? Because we're so culturally trained to not put pain on other people and not make people feel uncomfortable, that, you know, it's so hard to kind of navigate, you know. So I didn't tell a lot of people. And looking back at it, I regret that decision, because when we had to terminate for medical reasons, there was no support. So we had the weekly, so hard. We had the weekly ultrasounds. And then there was one ultrasound where the doctor who is now doing the ultrasounds, the fertility doctor who's now doing the ultrasounds, said, I think we may have to terminate. We have to terminate twin A, because it looks like you may have a ruptured membrane, and this could be, this is going to get serious. This, we were like week 20 by this point. Yeah. Around week 20, roughly, from what I remember. And we were sent home to try to make a decision, right? Like, obviously we're like, this is the worst decision to ever make in your life. But if they're sure that one twin isn't going to survive, and in order to have the other twin survive, and we're like researching, we're doing our own research, our own inquiry. And then we went back for another ultrasound after an amniocentesis, which was so traumatic because there was so much blood. And the technician was like, I can't even continue with this. Like, I'm so scared. I can't continue with this. She goes, you need to go do another ultrasound. So we went back and did another ultrasound. And that's when they said, you're leaking amniotic fluid. You have a ruptured membrane. This pregnancy could possibly kill you, and it's not viable. And we were about 21 and a half weeks. And they said, if you want to terminate in Canada, you have to do it before 24 weeks. And if you do it after 24 weeks, you have to go to the States. And we're like,
what?
Oh my God. So again, I was like, I can't.
For your own health, for their health, for
everybody. Yeah, everything.
Okay.
And then my husband's like,
thanks.
Oh God.
Thanks. Like, thanks, healthcare system, for taking care of me. Not.
Right? Oh my God, I know. I talk about this in my memoir about the words that were shared and the space that was held. And so we didn't believe the one specialist, so we spoke to another specialist. I think we spoke to about three specialists, obviously all working in the same hospital, but we just needed to get more information. And my husband looked at me and said, Jen, if it's the choice between your life, and we know that our twins have had such a struggle and everyone's saying that it's not a viable pregnancy, and you're here living, I don't want to take your life away. Like that means like the twins will die and you will die. Kind of, it got to that point. And I was like, oh God, like I didn't even think about that. Like I was so focused on saving the twins. And so we made the decision to terminate for medical reasons. And oh man, what a decision to have to make, right? The only word I have is just insane, just absolutely insane.
Yeah, you never think that this is going to be part of your parenting.
Motherhood journey, right?
Voices, decision, journey. Yeah, whatever words you want to put in there. Planning on parenting them. This is a parenting.
Yeah.
Piece of parenting that's just not talked about.
No, it's not. No. And so we went to the hospital, made the appointment. And so I'm in this room with all these women, not a lot of men, about to have a termination, and everyone for their own reason. And I'm here 22 weeks pregnant. And I was like, wow. Again, I'm in a waiting room again, more trauma. And I'm just like looking at my feet and I'm like, okay, just look at your feet, Jen. Just wait till they call your name. Just look at your feet. So I'm numbing myself. I'm disassociating. I'm just like, just get through this. Just get through this. No tools at this point, not even knowing that I was being traumatized. Just knew that this was really hard. I had to just get it, survive.
Yeah. How would you know that language?
No.
If you don't know the language.
Exactly.
How do you even know how to like advocate for grief support in a pregnancy if you don't even know? And then they're like, your procedure, your whatever. And it's like, what? I'm losing wanted babies. I'm a bereaved parent. Why are you treating me like this?
Oh my God, Sabrina, that is so powerful. Yeah, so powerful. So powerful. I'm a bereaved parent. I'm going through grief right now. And it was so clinical. It was so clinical. We book the procedure. We go into this room. There's like these like really disgusting butterflies on the ceiling. You know, I'm lying down. There's this man, two nurses, my husband sitting on a chair, and they stop the heartbeats. And I talk about this in my book. After they start the heartbeats of her twins, the doctor says to my husband, what's her favorite food? And my husband kind of looks at him and says, what do you mean? He goes, I think you should probably take her out for a nice dinner. And he's like, I think it's Italian. And I'm lying here after they've stopped the heartbeats. And the doctor.
Who the F is thinking about your favorite meal? Could you imagine? Okay, let me just say, could you imagine them doing that in like a NICU, in like a neonatal ICU unit where there's been a decision to remove the tubes, to remove the care? Would they do that? Would they do that in that moment?
God, I hope not. I hope not.
Hopefully they would bring in the chaplain. Hopefully they would bring in the social worker. Hopefully they would give you the bereavement room.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They would say, let us make you comfortable. Here, hold them. Mm-hmm. Now we'll leave you alone.
Mm-hmm. Now that we
go through this, you know, crazy, you know, rite of passage, you know, your child's passing and your rite of passage into a bereaved parent. No room. There's no space for that when it's TFMR in some places. And I hear stories in some places where they do hold space and they create an environment like that, but it's way too far and few between. And I'm sorry you didn't get that. You deserved that in that moment.
Thanks, Sabrina. Yeah, no, it was awful. It was really, this is like 2013. It was awful. It was awful. And I'm thinking, did he just tell my husband to take me out for an Italian because that would make me feel better? And understand, the babies are still in my tummy. Like the babies are still in my womb. I still have the two babies there. That he's just stopped the heartbeat. So we go home and I have to wait 3 days. 3 days for my D and E, or yeah, D and C, D and E. Hmm. 3 days. So every day I'm on the phone going, is there a cancellation? Why do I have to wait 3 days? Like I'm at home with dead babies in my, like, if this was happening to a man, you would never do this to the, like, why am I in this position? Like no one can answer my questions. No one could get me in sooner. Oh. Just a body, just a number. Oh. Yeah. We finally go in, we have the procedure. And then literally 20 minutes before we go in, this woman comes in with pamphlets and asks me if I want a footprint or a lock of hair. And I'm already like disoriented. They already gave me medication to help me with the anesthesia.
What? Oh, no.
Oh, and I was just
that
like,
that should have been that other day. Are they?
Oh. I know. And then I'm hoping that this is now not the case, that this is not happening right now. Makes me want to go over there and make sure. But I just said, my husband, I said, you have to answer these questions. Like I can't, I have no cognitive ability. I cannot, I know. And so my husband made the decision, which we both know that we regret, but it was the best decision that we made at that time, that we didn't want anything to do. It was so clinical. Aww. We just wanted to get it done. So we're just like, no, we don't want anything. Just can we
because
just
they had kind
this?
Of corralled you into that direction.
Yes. Yes. It was so medical.
So how else are you going to react?
Totally, Sabrina. Totally, totally, totally. You nailed it. Exactly. It was like, that was the only way of thinking at that point.
And then I imagine that creates some sort of like weird confirmation bias for them. Like, see, they always reject it anyway. So why even offer... Why even do this? We don't want to put our own meaning on their abortion, you know? Ugh.
Totally. I know. And so sadly, that was our experience with terminating for medical reasons. And then after that, I still bled for a year, but the doctor kept saying to me, oh, you can try anytime for a baby. Like, wait, you're 6 weeks and then try again. Are you trying again? I'm like, I'm still bleeding. Like, I don't understand. And then of course I was in full trauma. And the day the twins were supposed to be born, October 17th, I went into a full shock. My body shook and tremored for 20 minutes. And my husband was like, I have no idea what to do. And I said, I think it's trauma. I think I'm releasing trauma. And then many years later, when our daughter Loie died at stillbirth, I was diagnosed with PTSD. But that was from the compound trauma, from the terminating for medical reasons, infertility trauma, and the death of our daughter. But the death of our daughter was in a much better environment. They moved me away from the maternity ward. They gave us our own room for 3 days. Mm-hmm. It was all women. It was all women. And they held beautiful space. There was a social worker that came in literally in the morning and in the afternoon, beautiful souls. And I had a birth doula. It was, you know, of course, the worst thing that you could do, give birth to your dead baby. But in it, they tried to make it as healing for me as possible. And it was because of the space they created, the nurturing, the love, everything. In my book, I say it's because of that womanly touch. It's because they held me in community. And then the social worker set up a grief therapy for my husband and I, literally like 2 or 3 days after. She's like, you need to see this person. She's expecting you. You go and see her.
What a difference.
What a difference.
And that, I imagine, was the catalyst into finding all of these other healing modalities, which you were denied in the last situation because they just saw it as a medical situation. Like, just get it over with and move on. Even the comments, you know, just try again.
Try again. try again.
When just you haven't again. Even reached the due date and you haven't even gone through this like psychological birthing experience, it sounds like you basically went into labor that day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Labor of trauma. Yeah. Boy, I didn't, and my body intuitively knew it just had to release. And both very traumatic episodes, but the support is what changes the trauma, right? The support, lack of support makes it traumatic, but with support, it's not as, right? And that's what we had with Loie. And that's why in Loie's situation, and when I got formally diagnosed with PTSD, I was able to move into changing that pain into purpose, we say, right? Which sometimes is what happens with grief.
Today's episode is sponsored by our Ascend TFMR Grief Circle Program. In the Ascend program for TFMR, termination for medical reasons, ending a wanted pregnancy, we see you. We see your motherhood, parenthood, fatherhood. We see your heartbreaking decision. We see your babies. We honor your grief. And when we come together to do this work, there is a community aspect of healing that is so desperately needed. I created this program because when I went looking for something like this after my own TFMR in 2018 and did not find anything, this was the space that I created for us. A place to be held, a place to write, to art, to speak, a place to transmute, to care, to share, to really honor ourselves and our babies. The next groups are starting in early May 2024. You'll find the link to learn more in the description, or you can go to the tfmrdoula.com/ascend-apply.
A lot of times what happens with grief, we take that pain and we create purpose. So becoming a grief companion, a grief coach, and advocating for pregnancy loss awareness and learning the healing modalities of tapping and hypnobreath work and time technique. Because as we know, as bereaved mothers, you're in that ocean of grief. It never goes away. And so there are some techniques that will help. And there are some techniques that you have to do over and over again, or you may have to learn something new. And so just having an arsenal or a toolkit of different techniques is what we kind of need to navigate after determining for medical reasons, which we could talk about now.
Yeah. And then there's this, then you get into the cycle of healing, which you end up healing other integrated or connected areas of your life. You know, you've become a motherhood coach.
Yes. Yes. So when we finally, and we looked at, yeah. Yeah, I know, right? We looked at each other one day and we're like, this can't be the end of our story. Let's try surrogacy. We sold our house and went through the surrogacy journey. And in itself, it had a lot of ups and downs, but we were very fortunate to have Milo, our son, who's now turning 5 next week. But then you move into that and having a baby, a live baby, brings back all the trauma from infertility, from loss, from grief, and the trauma from your childhood. And it's just compounding, and you're just like, oh gosh, you know? And the reason I became a conscious parenting coach with Dr. Shefali is because I really wanted to help others, but also for myself to get down, to understand the triggers, right? Because it's not fair to my son if I was hypervigilant or anxiety or unable to cope with life. You know, I had to really understand where this was coming from. And it was, you know, the loss of Loie and the infertility trauma and, you know, childhood stuff as well, as we all do as humans. Uh-huh. And then I realized, wait a minute, society's telling me to be one thing as a mom, but I'm actually don't fit that definition because my way to becoming a mom wasn't what society, you know, you're a woman, you should just have sex and have children. Like that's just the way it works. And it didn't, doesn't work for a lot of us like that. And so I was feeling very depressed. I was like, here I am with this beautiful baby, something I've worked so hard for, and I'm depressed. So that's why redefining motherhood, I think, for all of us is so incredibly important so that we understand our relationship with motherhood, not what society tells us it is. And also, yeah, understanding how the trauma plays in your life, right? So tapping, for instance, emotional freedom.
Okay, so that's the EFT.
Yeah, emotional freedom technique.
Okay.
Which is using based on your acupressure points. And it's a beautiful tool to use. And I can share a link. It's a beautiful tool to use in the moment. So if you're feeling anxious or you feel like grief is really, really heavy and you just need to have some space, you just tap on certain points in your body and it allows to recalibrate your nervous system. So we always start like, how are you feeling now? Feeling between 1 and 10, 10 being like really anxious or really full of emotion. And then you do it until you get to maybe like a 1 or 2. And it's just releasing the heavy emotions. Like for instance, I would use tapping if I was going to a party and I had social anxiety from my loss. Never had social anxiety before. Now had social anxiety.
Well, sure, because is this your first? Are you going to have another? Like, do you know my story? Yeah, you know what that means.
Oh my God, that happened to me this weekend. I went to the beach with my son.
Oh yeah, those are the questions.
The beautiful mom with her two children. She's like, is that your only one? And I'm like, no, he's not. No. We have a daughter, but she, you know, stillborn. Oh, I'm so sorry. What's her name? Like she was actually quite welcoming, but some people are like, oh,
and then they run away.
Yeah, that's it. That's the end of the conversation. And I was just like, okay, we definitely need to talk about this a little bit more. But yeah, I wonder why I had social anxiety. Because I was, yeah, fearful of all those discussions. And I would do a tapping technique. And I would tell myself, if they ask the question, this is what I'm going to say. And then you tap at the same time. And it just really allows your nervous system to recalibrate and reset. And so when those, you can go into those moments. And it's super effective for me in the present moment. Like if all of a sudden, if I'm feeling anxious or stressed or I'm in a stress response, then I can do tapping. Another technique I used was time techniques. And time is time integration for maximum empowerment. And it's an NLP technique.
Okay, so that's an acronym for the T-I-M-E. Time integration.
For maximum empowerment.
Empowerment. Yeah, I want some empowerment. Yeah, right? I've been so disempowered and told, you know, your choice, your decision. So why are you so sad about it? In so many words. You know, no one has actually said that to me, but it's implied through a lot of different realms and ways and pathways.
When I first started sharing about terminating for medical reasons, the journey, there are some people that would say, well, you chose to become a mom, like you chose this path. So that's what happens. And you're like, well, you're negating the humanistic emotions. Like, yeah, I chose to become a mom. I didn't choose to have to terminate my children though. That was that choice. It's this polarity of like, well, that's what you, it's just puzzles me, society.
And I would say now I feel, and I've learned how to carry that burden of responsibility, as my friend Kate Carson says, burden of responsibility. Isn't that motherhood? Isn't that parenthood? Because whatever choice you make, someone's going to be like, awful mother, monster, bad choice, selfish, really whatever choice. I see those comments on people who have a poor diagnosis in pregnancy and continue the pregnancy, and then they're raising this medically complicated child or disabled child, and people in the comments say those things to them too. So we can't win.
No, it's a patriarchal society that women can't win. We're not supported. And there's like, either you're right. You've nailed it. Like, yeah, either you keep the pregnancy and then you have a child who's, you know, needs medical assistance all the time, and they're told,
or in a grave later, or maybe you too.
Yeah. Unbelievable. I know. And that's why we need to change the narrative. That's why normalizing all these so people can understand that we're just not bodies, eh?
Yeah. And I think that time technique maybe can work with even those awful things that people say, or like going back to the bits of your story where the story is informed by these really awful ideas.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I love that. Because like grief will compound to other limiting beliefs or other emotions, right? So what NLP does, it will help eliminate those negative emotions, release those limiting beliefs, and like undo past guilt and anxiety and really allow you to feel empowered, right? So being able to rewrite the script in order to be able to live in the present moment and understand the choices and have that self-agency for yourself, right? Because a lot of us are shamed for our choice. And if we can understand that we made a choice and we were empowered in that choice as best as we could, then we can also now in the present moment be able to self-advocate for ourselves and have that self-agency, which was taken away, particularly for me, in that whole fertility journey, you know?
There's not the orienting or the getting like true consent, truly informed consent, or all the explanations of, you know, this will happen, then this will happen, then you may feel this, then you may, if this happens, you know, let us know you're feeling this.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's just get on with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start looking into like the racist beginnings of our modern gynecological system, and it all makes sense.
Right.
Let's just do what we wish to these chattel female bodies.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot without any pain medication. Horrific, horrific stories that I've been reading.
Or consent.
No consent. No consent. And I understand that I am a white privileged woman going through this, and I can hold the duality of that and also know that it was traumatic for me. And yeah, just there was just assumed consent. You know, even when they have to do ultrasounds, which I did every other week, it was like, this is going to be cold. Boom. And you're like, you could have at least asked, are you ready for this? Like, are you ready for this? I'm have to do this. And this is what we're doing. Like, are you ready for it? Rather than this is going to be cold. Boom. You know, with the ultrasound wand. So
I had a teeth cleaning recently. And I think that dentist is trauma informed. Every single thing he's like, okay, now I'm going to move this across your face. Is that okay? And I was like,
oh. Amazing.
And my whole body was like,
right?
Oh. I'm like, this experience can even go back and help me heal what happened with my TFMR.
Oh, that is powerful. That's what happened with Loey. Mm. I was able to take those moments of safety, of resource, of my nervous system feeling safe to be in that spot or that place in order to heal with what happened with terminating criminal reasons. Ooh, Sabrina, that I'm kind of like goosebumps. That's just like so powerful. Oh man.
Mm.
It's so true.
And I imagine, because I don't know anything about this time technique, I imagine that this comes into play. How does it, do we all go back and forth between our memory and like find moments of when we were being well taken care of, and then, or are we going back, or how does it work?
Great question. So with the time technique, you do it with an NLP practitioner, a trained practitioner, which I am. And then if you're feeling like just a bout of guilt, shame, and anxiety, there is a script to follow. And we try to find out how old this anxiety is. So it's somatic as well. Like, how old is this anxiety and guilt? Because with grief, it does attach itself to things. And then we go back to that memory using a script, and then we find the memory, and then we go to that memory and we try to rewrite the script. Well, we rewrite the script. And so that the anxiety, the shame, the guilt, the people pleasing, all that is rewritten so that you are more in your maximum empowerment when you are telling your story, when you're living your life, when you're parenting after loss, or when you're continuing on in your fertility journey, and also trying to navigate grief and how you show up as yourself, not what society tells you to do. So that's why time technique is really good, because it really digs deep and uncovers the root, and it helps us integrate grief into our lives. And another amazing technique that I have been using recently that has changed my life, all these techniques have been amazing, but hypnobreath work has been incredible. And I'm proud to say that I'm a certified hypnobreathwork facilitator and part of the Mastery app. And there's actually an infertility hypnobreathwork session that I did on the app that I can send to you as well.
But yes, please. That'll be helpful.
Super. And yeah, it's an amazing app. I have conscious parenting stuff in there and also an infertility session. And hypnobreath work, we know breath work is so incredibly strong and potent. And it works so incredibly well with grief. It's like a 20-minute breath work session with a series of songs or a series of theta wave music. And it gets you into your theta brain with your breath. And what we do is we bring forth any emotions that are stagnant. Or like if you're really stuck in your grief or you're really kind of stuck in the pain and you feel like you really are ready to kind of integrate it, not move on or move past, but integrate it so that you take the kind of power away from it. We go through this hypnobreath work where we allow the body to feel this emotion. And again, this is scripted, done with a certified facilitator. And then using your breath, we release it. We literally somatically release it from your body. And you'll see like images and you'll see words come to you. And then we move into a place where we repattern, right? And what I've experienced holding this space with women who have lost pregnancies or gone through infertility trauma is they start to see their babies. They start to see messages come to them. And it can be so healing and so compassionate. And then with that, we visualize. We visualize this integration of the grief. We visualize our life. We visualize what our goal is. We visualize where we want to go. And then it moves into a meditation so that everything starts to get integrated. So your nervous system, because it's active breath work, your nervous system recalibrates and you come out of it just feeling lighter. And I always allow 10 minutes of writing afterwards because the thoughts and the processes that come up are incredible. And so everyone just gets an opportunity to write their thoughts, write what came up, because you really are so deep in your subconscious that you're able to allow things to come up and you're able to be present with it. And that's just been life-changing for me.
I have a question about breath work. I don't know if it's the type of breath work that maybe I've tried just, you know, randomly. Sometimes it's at the beginning of people's podcasts or this or that little integrated meditation and in their whatever platform. But sometimes it feels really triggering to do the breath work. I think because there's no room for me to feel what feels safe, like holding my breath usually doesn't feel safe for my nervous system. Mm-mm. You know, like box breathing, that one doesn't work for me. Do you have any comments on this? I'm sure this comes up and probably other people, you know, will have the same concern.
Definitely. Breath work is activated. And it's activated for a reason because it goes deep in your subconscious. So the hypnobreath work that I do, especially around grief and loss and infertility trauma, is on the gentler side. So the tone of voice is quieter. The prompts are kinder. And we don't hold our breath. So it's the three-part breath. It's inhale twice through your nose, exhale through your mouth. So inhales through the nose, exhale through the mouth. And I'm make sure that I read the room, right? And always say, if you're starting to feel that anxiety and it's to a point that it's too much, then we slow down the breath. We slow down the breath. I had a client.
I think it's that lack of prompting in these other things. It needs to be.
Yeah.
And they're probably not grief or trauma informed.
Yeah, probably.
They're just like, get ahead in your business. Yeah. Get ahead in life. Reach your goals.
Yeah.
Hold and your breath for 1 minute.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, no.
If you can do this, you can do anything.
Anything. Yeah, exactly. Oh.
And I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
And it reactivates the non-informed, non-consent. Is that even a word? That's a stupid word. What was forced on me. You know, in my loss.
Yeah.
Because a lot was forced on me with the laws, with the this, with the language, with the timing, with the your husband can't be here, with the this is the way we do it.
I'm so sorry. I am so sorry. That sucks. That's awful.
So I don't just want to push through all of that. That needs holding and care.
Yes.
And to be seen.
Yes.
And to be given validated. A gentle place to lay down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Before I do any hypno breath work sessions, we take a good 15 minutes before to talk, to create that safety.
I like that.
Yeah. To really connect with your subconscious, because your body will only bring up something that it's ready to release. And so we talk a lot about that. So inviting and giving your body the permission, your subconscious, the permission to come up and do things. And I'm always watching, always making sure that everything's okay. If I see that there's anything to be concerned about, we stop. Saying that, a lot of women cry, and which is a huge release for the nervous
crying
system.
Crying is not a bad thing.
Not yes. Can we say that over and over again? Because sometimes people get quite scared. Like, oh, but if I cry, I'm like, that's good. Your body's releasing. If you're yawning or crying, your nervous system is releasing, letting go. So yeah, those are the techniques that I've been using that have been really, really powerful.
Thank you for sharing those with us and for listening to my concerns.
I don't know. I've had those questions before. And if you've experienced breath work without a trauma-informed person, it can be scary. It might be scary, you know? So it's understandable.
I think sometimes even the pranayama prompts in some yoga classes too.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I will not be doing the holding the breath part. I don't hold my breath. And I just don't do that part. Or if they're like, now we're going to do this for 18 rounds. If my body's like 12 was enough. And then that's, yeah. And I feel like the counting and the holding and like putting it into this box, this form, that's a very like masculine, patriarchal.
It is.
And that is where my wounding is through my loss, because it was in this very strict sort of box and I didn't fit in the box.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt like I was the one who was wrong.
Isn't that interesting how we are the ones going through it, but we're the ones that feel like we're made to feel that we did something wrong?
No, thanks. It's like that one quote that said, we've been made to feel afraid of the witches when we really should be afraid of the ones who burned the witches.
Yes, very much so. You can see it in the medical system. You can see what's happening in the States right now with reproductive rights. And so like
upside down world.
Oh man. And we have to heal in that world. Like we need to self-advocate and have self-agency for our own healing. And I think that's why it's so important that we share stories and we talk about this and we have discussions like we're having right now, people listening to it, because they'll take what they need from it. And hopefully they'll be able to find validation and compassion and grace for what they're going through in language.
Mm-hmm. And to use the parts that work for them in that moment with their level of, to use the term, you know, nervous system regulation, however safe or activated or still parts of them that are in crisis mode and like, this is too much for now.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Listen to that.
Exactly.
Listen to that. That is your inner knowledge. Wisdom.
Knowing. Yes.
Listen to that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's your, yeah. The autonomy's gone. And I had no autonomy, no body autonomy through this whole entire journey. And when we're allowed to listen to our inner knowing, we regain our body's autonomy. We regain our own autonomy, which.
Mm-hmm. And that is what they want. They want to keep us in that state of disempowered.
Yes, confused, right? Trust. How many times did I hear,
vote for me. Okay.
Yeah. Or like, yeah. Oh my God. The state of confusion, and you go and you ask for advice or something, and people are just trust the doctors. They know what they're doing. And I just thought, if I hear that one more time, I mean, and not negating that there's some pop really love, like, again, Loie's story, beautiful doctors, beautiful nurses. But that is one in 11 years of my journey of experiencing misogynistic, patriarchal stuff. But healing.
Yeah.
On so many different levels.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is the revolution, so that we can, you know, go out and advocate more for all of those who may not have the privileges that we have.
Very true. Very true. And my story as, I don't even know what the word would be, but incredible as in like I've experienced it all.
Oh, man.
Terminating for medical reasons. But then there's
the
other women.
Bingo card that no one wants.
The full bingo card, And, you know, there's so many other women that have lost lives in their birth and partners who have lost, you know, wives. And it's something that,
looking at the racial disparities, like with Black and Indigenous folks.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Yeah.
How their risks of stillbirth and maternal death are higher.
So high.
Because
so much
of the
higher.
System.
Because what of the
about,
system and the way it's
what
created.
What about if we think it's the system that's broken, not me having a, you know, normal reaction to this broken, not even broken, it's just awful system.
Yeah.
It was meant to be this way.
Yeah. Controlling. Yeah. Oppressive.
Demeaning, dismissive.
Gaslighting. The amount of gaslighting that happened. Oh, boy.
Medical gaslighting.
Especially around terminating for medical reasons. Very interesting. Very interesting. And I hope things are changing. And I hope that doctors are becoming more aware.
Slowly. Did I invite you to take part in the upcoming TFMR Awareness Day? I think I did.
Oh, I have to look for that. I would be super honored.
Yeah. So that's May 4th every year, but this will be third annual. Yeah. So
it's
a very new awareness day. And it's a way to continue these conversations. And every year I get more and more nurses and other doulas and psychologists following me to learn more about
how
we experience these losses. So it's important. And they want to learn. And sometimes I post, if you're not sharing this or this, you know, you're excluding us. And a lot of people are willing to learn. And they say, I didn't know, I didn't realize. And I'm going to start doing that now. So I want to keep calling them in.
Yes, please.
You can include us in this way.
Yeah.
You can share in this way. You can just, you know, add TFMR to your list. And then that means the world to us.
So much.
Or learn about people who go through infertility. Learn a little bit more about trauma. Even learning a little bit means a lot.
A lot.
And then can even help you, you know, notice it. And maybe you have to earmark them somewhere else. But that's professional. That's professionalism. You know, I'm not a specialist in this, but I think it might be a good idea for you to look into a specialist in this realm.
Mm-hmm.
That's wonderful. We need more of that. More.
Better. They have to do better. They just have to do better. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Just have to do better.
So you have a book coming out. Do you have a way that people can work one-on-one? Do you have group programs? Tell us
what
you do.
So right now I am in the season of writing. I've just finished my book proposal and it's a doozy and it's going out to agents this week.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And it's talking about it's a memoir social commentary. So it talks about what we talked about right now, the gaslighting, the lack of consent, the patriarchal grip on infertility, using my story to create awareness, to continue the conversation and to really help others heal. And so, you know, watch this space. I'm hoping it will get picked up and shared. I'm also working on a children's book about siblings who have lost siblings through terminating for medical reasons, stillbirth, miscarriages. And at the moment, I'm not seeing clients, but I'm working on a group program that I hope to do this summer. So
can they get on a wait list or something?
Yeah. If you go on to lossintransition.ca or even DM me on Instagram, we'll have your email and we'll be able to send it out. And I'm also working on a podcast series to talk about all the different seasons and journeys of motherhood, from terminating for medical reasons, miscarriages, IVF, egg donor, stillbirth, surrogacy, to just normalize that. It just is not about having sex and then having a baby. Sorry. Not for all of us. So I'm looking forward to that. That's in the works of being created too. So a lot happening.
Jen.
Yeah.
Thank you. Instagram, what's your handle?
It's Jen, J-E-N-N underscore Hepton.
That's under your name now.
Yeah, it's the infertility. And then I have a conscious parenting. I'm also a fair play facilitator working on domestic equality, because I realized becoming a mom and through infertility, a lot of the emotional and mental labor is on women.
Mm.
And it needs to be shared. It has to be shared. So that is on my other Instagram, which is my full name, Jennifer underscore Hepton.
Okay. So you got a couple of places where people could follow depending on what they're interested in.
Yeah, definitely.
Sounds good.
Yay.
One last nugget of inspiration for people in this part of life.
What would
say to them?
Believe yourself. I'm not going to say believe in yourself. That's not what I'm trying to say. I'm just believe your thoughts, believe your feelings. Don't gaslight yourself, because I think what happens is we are in this journey of fertility and there's so much pressure from the medical field, from family, from friends, from society, and we start to lose a sense of who we are. And I think it's very important to believe your thoughts, believe your feelings, believe what you're going through, and that will create knowledge and awareness to allow you to really have self-agency and self-advocating for yourself, because it can be a lonely process. But if you have
the communities that we find ourselves in,
and that creates a lot of empowerment as well.
And as individuals, we deserve to be well, you know, as a little piece of our community. And
the mental health is really important. When I was going through all of this, I didn't think about seeing a therapist. I didn't think about reaching out for my I just, like, you just get to go through it. It's like that. It's the assumed
Just get to the next 2 weeks. Yeah. Just get through the 2 weeks. Get to the next transfer. Just get to the next round of shots. Like, we'll just get through it. We'll get it.
Yeah. It's this assumed narrative for mothers or women going through this, that everything has to be suffering, that everything has to be hard. And so we just are survivors. We're warriors. And we're warriors in something that was created in a very patriarchal way. And we need
some different tools, which you have for us.
Yes, and we have different tools.
So do I, these communities.
We're not alone. You're not alone. If you're listening to this, you are not alone. Oh my gosh, you're not alone. Reach out. Yeah.
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah. You should join our Facebook group too, because it's only for people who have gone through TFMR.
I know you sent me an invite. I need to look for that as well. I was going to join in. I have to do it on my phone.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, Sabrina, thank you for everything.
I'll put that in the description.
Yeah.
If any of you want to join us there, and all of Jen's links will be here as well. Thank you.